Welcome back to The Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll get back to Mark Becker's conversation with legendary broadcaster Paul Page from last year, a best of program this week. But once again, that message from Mark Becker about last week's show.
Hey, everyone. Mark here. Hey, if I make a mistake that might cast doubt in the hearts and the minds of our listeners when it comes to especially stuff like the election, I do want to get that corrected because that's true to my integrity and it's true to the integrity of the show. Last week, in the heat of discussion, I incorrectly said that Kamala Harris got more votes than Donald Trump. She didn't. She got about 2 million less. However, the point I was trying to make was that Donald Trump keeps saying that he has this mandate. He doesn't. The fact is, the majority of the country voted for someone else. And that was the point that I was trying to make. So I'm sorry if that caused any confusion, but you know, on this show, it's not about left versus right. It's about right versus wrong. And I want to make sure that we get that one right. So thank you for listening, and looking forward to seeing you down the road. We'll see you next week.
Welcome back to The Rational Revolution. This is a fun one. We've got my childhood hero, Paul Page, legendary broadcaster of Open Wheel and all things fast. Here on the show, and I wanted to talk about one of the things that you were so especially good at, and you kind of touched on it before the break, is I feel that if you're a fan of motorsports, it's a little bit of a niche thing, and so yep. You have to kind of tell people why they should, like you said earlier in the show, put all of your attention to these humans that are doing incredibly remarkable things. And I think you had such a perfect balance between talking to people who tune in religiously every week, but also balancing that with welcoming in new people to the broadcasts and allowing them to learn.
Well, that's nice of you to say, because that was one of the objectives.
Oh, cool.
We knew that we were a niche and that there were a lot of people that didn't know us, but if they did, we thought that we would be able to keep them. And so you had to balance that broadcast with going for the connoisseur and making sure you put enough of that kind of meat into it, the little technical things or the little driver facts that they really love. But you also then had to almost constantly be updating the person that's just stepped into the chair for the first time. And so you really make me feel good that you say that, because that was part of our objective, was we had to figure out how to do both.
It was. And, you know, and I think, like, it's, you know, my son likes to watch NASCAR, and there's so often.
I'm sorry for him.
I know. Well, we're getting into to Open Wheel a little more because, you know, but the broadcasting, you know, every time they talk about, you know, the new one lug nut, which is so funny how that's like this remarkable, oh my God, moment for NASCAR. We went to one lug nut to hold on the wheel, which is what IndyCar and CART have been doing for 30 freaking years. But then they cut to this same graphic that goes for a minute and 45 seconds. That's like, okay, here we go again. You know, where you have someone that was a real professional that can explain that in layman's terms and then move on. Right. Yeah. And so that was something that was, it was so easy to get sucked into the world of CART because it was a circus. It really was.
Yes, it very definitely was.
And
we'd call it that internally.
Oh, did you really?
Uh-huh.
No kidding.
Yep. The circus is starting again. Here we go.
Yeah. Right. And I mean, there was the highest of highs and the lowest of the lows. And I remember my favorite driver was the old Red Gloves, Greg Moore. He's a guy from Canada.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
what a beautiful human being.
Wasn't he? You know,
yes.
And I can remember and the very moment in Fontana where Greg's tire dug in and he hit the wall head on. And Paul, I can remember the inflection of your voice when you watched it and you just said, oh my God. I remember that, Paul. I got goosebumps. I can remember that like it was yesterday. And they just celebrated, or not celebrated, they just, you know, remembered, what was it, 20 years since he died?
Yeah.
How, something like, I mean, but I remember that, like it was yesterday. And I know it wasn't typically you that would have to break that news that someone has passed away. You know, it was typically Jerry Punch or a pit reporter or something. But inevitably, they always cut back to you. And it was you, the voice of comfort, the voice of, okay, guys, here's how we're going to get through this. I mean, I cried. When I was a little kid, I cried when I found out that Greg Moore had passed away. And the cameras turn to you. How do you deal with something like the unthinkable?
Well, I had to do it too many times.
Yeah.
If you were lucky, I say that advisedly, you'd have a bad accident, but the individual was not killed at the track.
Yeah.
And then it got delayed and you didn't have to deal with it because it was announced after the race.
Oh, sure.
But when you had things like Greg Moore and Krasnov and Coletta, just
Scott Brayton, yeah.
It just rips your heart out, again, yeah. Because they're your friends, they're your buddies, they're your brothers.
Yeah.
And Greg Moore especially, because that morning I was down doing my usual troll through the pits, and he and I were talking, and you know, he had a great future coming. He was going to go to Penske the next year.
Yes.
And Lord knows how many races he would have won.
Oh, my God.
But he had wrecked his scooter the night before.
I remember that.
And in doing it, he broke some bones in his hand, and they created a special splint fiberglass thing to hold his hand so he could race. And he was laughing about it and laughing about, you know, the lidocaine that they were putting there is so good. Maybe they ought to put it in my butt so I won't feel how high the gravity G's are on the race car.
Yeah.
We're just having a great time. And then to see that, and you do this long enough, you know instantly what it was.
Yeah.
And then to have to wait, because everybody's got to be notified. It's all got to be dealt with. In that particular case, the people running IndyCar got a little off base in that they came up with this idea of they were going to lower the flags and call a yellow light and then make the announcement. This is, you know, it's not what this is. This man has died. He's got a family crying. Well, this is not the time you do those kind of things. I was furious.
Oh, right.
And on the other side of the glass next to me was the race control and Wally Dahlenbeck, the chief steward, and we just kept looking at each other like, what are they doing? Why are they doing it this way? And so finally we said, you know, they can do whatever they want. And they actually brought the flags down once and then they put them back up. They couldn't coordinate anything.
Wow.
And so I just said, we know everybody's notified. We're going to tell the audience. Because they need to know. Their hearts are in their mouths over that accident, too.
Yeah.
So, but dealing with those, then you reach down and you try to remember the good things and try to give some ease to the pain that I think everybody is feeling.
Right.
When you have those kind of things. Just horrible. And, you know, we're unlike any other sport, motorsports. It is not only possible, it is somewhat likely that you will have a serious or a fatal accident at one time or another.
Yeah, and here we're talking with legendary broadcaster Paul Page, and I think, it's no disrespect to the, you know, Scott Braytons of the world, but I think, you know, when you can see, Greg Moore was what, 24, I think.
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
And the legacy that he left in his such short time in American open wheel racing, and everybody knows him and everybody, you know, just remarks about what an incredibly, genuinely wonderful person he was. What a legacy that is, you know, and I can't imagine how many champions he'd probably gone to Formula One. Oh my God. He was so good. And
there is a little Greg Moore story there.
I'll love it.
When he was just trying to get an IndyCar or a kart ride at that time. One day I'm looking at this kid who is hanging around in front of Roger Penske's operation, his team set up at the track. And he's just standing. He stood there for a couple of hours. Every time I go by, this kid's still standing. And it was Greg Moore.
Really?
And he was looking for an opportunity to talk to Roger Penske. And so I finally said to one of Penske's lieutenants, a guy named Dan Lugendew, I said, Dan, this kid's been standing out here, really wants to talk to Roger. What do you think? He's all, we got to get him in. And so they arranged for him to talk to Roger. And, of course, he at that time, he didn't go to Roger. He was with Forsythe that year. But Roger liked him, and Roger was going to put him in a car in the next year.
That's crazy. That's so cool.
But he stayed with it. He's standing out there, and he's going to stand there until he gets to talk to Roger. And that was super.
That's awesome. Wow. And how much of that is, you know, does that exist today about, you know, and I don't know how it was with kart, but in IndyCar, there's a certain number of seats that, like, and I don't want to disrespect any drivers, but it's like they're not the best because some of them, and it's a decent number, are paid and they buy their way into the series. And was that like that back then as well?
It was. It wasn't as prevalent. And when I started, the driver got a portion of the purse.
No,
so you'll notice we never announce the purse anymore because we don't really know what it is.
Right.
But usually then 60% went to the driver and the rest was then allocated to the owner and the team mechanics and you know, whatever else. Now it's not that way at all. You'll never hear what they're paid.
No.
And I actually think that in many ways, today the field is far deeper than it was back then.
Really?
I really believe any time they take a green flag now, that there's a good chance that 15 of them are capable of winning. But in those days, it was number more like 7 or 8. If you're really on top of it, you could probably tell that it was going to be this guy or that guy. And more often than not, you could say it's going to be that guy.
Yeah.
But you really had to be there, and you had to have the feeling, and you had to be talking to everybody and see what their attitudes were to be able to do that.
Yeah.
The thing I have with today's drivers that kind of bothers me is they've become corporate guys.
Yes.
You don't see, you know, well, you mentioned Alex Zanardi. It was just a joy to be around.
Oh, my gosh,
always joking around, having a great time. He loved what he was doing.
Yeah.
Well, we've got Elio, who is that way.
Yes.
And we, you know, Tony Kanaan was certainly that way, but we're losing those guys, and we're losing them to guys who have been trained to be, and properly so, they got to develop a personality that a corporate boardroom will like.
Right.
And so no controversy, you know, they just, they just try to, they're very vanilla.
Yeah.
And I wish some of them had more out there to say. I love it. Racing is conflict. So
yes.
It can be conflict off the track too, you know?
Right. One of the things that attracted me to motorsports was the quality of the broadcast. And that's why when I went to Road America the first time, and it was in my adulthood, I took all of those memories that you gave me with me along to the track. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about where IndyCar, where motorsports is today on the other side of the break. We'll see you in a little bit.